This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Oh, that's a nice way to start the day. I think the Everly Brothers there, Phil and Don, from Central City, Kentucky, you know, with Bowling Green. And that from my Russellville native previous DJ, Patrick. So, good morning. This is Mick. It's Trivial Thursdays on WRFL. 15 after 7 in the AM. Good morning to you. What are we in September now? I think so. September 8th is the day. Hope you're doing great today. It's my pleasure every week to host Trivial Thursdays from 7 until 9 in the morning on Thursdays. And let's see, I get to visit with some of Lexington's luminaries and cultural leaders and people doing cool stuff to make Lexington a cooler place. And there is no shortage. There's never a shortage, it seems like. So I'm delighted this week to, a little later on in the show, we're going to visit with Julie Wren of the Kentucky Women Writers Conference, which is a venerable ongoing event that's coming up. That's coming up later in the show, in the second hour of the show. In just a little bit here, after the break, I am delighted to get to visit with one of the organizers of the Roots and Heritage Festival, which is about to kick off tomorrow. One of my favorite things that happens in downtown Lexington. And so we're going to get a preview of that. And, oh, I don't even know what else. Who knows? I do know this. The Monkees put out a new record. Just kind of crazy. One of them's dead. But they put out this new record, and they did this really smart thing. They put out a record called Good Times, and they had a variety of today's hip young songwriters. No, just like several songwriters, like the guy from Death Cab for Cutie and some others, including Andy Partridge from XTC. And so I'm going to play a Monkees song for you. And if it sounds just like XTC, that's why. Andy Partridge wrote this song. And anyway, this is an album, Good Times, this Monkees album. It's really good. If I ever play that, it's just the way it goes. It has to happen because, September's a pretty good month for songs. You know, there's September by Earth, Wind, and Fire, which, you know, kind of tops the list. But, you know, then there's the old the song from the 20s called September Song that gets covered by a lot of jazz artists, and which is a little more somber. And then there's like September Girls by Big Star. And, you know, there's just, we have to sort of cover the September bases. But Earth, Wind, and Fire, September. It's just always going to get played. I don't care if this is an alternative radio station. And I'll always have, I used to live in New York City. And first of all, I just want to say hi to my guest, Kimberly Henderson Baird, who's here. Hi, Kimberly.
Hello. Good morning.
So I used to live in New York, and, on like literally like three occasions in the time that I lived there, I went out like disco dancing, you know, like to the big New York discos with all the flashing lights and people all dressed up and everybody going crazy. And I'll just always have this super fond memory of I was like, you sort of don't know what to do. It's actually sort of awkward because you don't really know anybody, you know, except maybe like the dude you came with or something. And but I remember like, So I finally get comfortable with like dancing on the dance floor, sort of by myself, really, you know, and like the strobe light's going and they're playing September and the strobe light is like going on, off, on, off. And it's on and I look across the floor and there's a really beautiful girl and it goes off and then it comes back on and I look across the floor and a beautiful girl, and she's looking at me. and goes off and then goes back on again, and the beautiful girl's gone. I still maintain it as a fond memory. So anyway, that's part of what I get out of listening to September. I saw that you like September too.
I was doing a little dancing in here. I'm glad this is radio and not TV.
Well, September is a it's a traditionally an exciting month for you. I'd say it's the payoff kind of a lot of planning. Am I wrong?
That is correct. It will be exciting for me on Sunday after it's over.
Right.
It's a lot of prep work right now.
And that, and then this, of course, what we're talking about is the Roots and Heritage Festival, of which you are the chair.
That's right.
And maybe have been for some time.
12 years, I think.
Have you gotten anybody to take over for you?
No!
You can't trick anybody to take over for you.
No, and they keep saying, oh, but you're doing such a good job. Okay. I have to tell people it takes one big mess up and then I'll be out. So, no, it was supposed to be temporary, and 12 years later, here I am.
I think I've been going for 12 years at least. So, I was really excited to get a hold of you through our mutual friend, Sister Patrice Muhammad, and talk about one of my favorite things in Lexington, just topping almost all the lists, really.
Yay.
of cool, free to the public things that happen.
Yes.
And that's the annual Roots and Heritage Festival.
Yes.
Which happens, is it the second weekend in September? Is that how you
guys
do it?
It's always the weekend after Labor Day.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's downtown. It's kind of centers around Elm Tree Lane and 3rd. Mm-hmm. It's hard to miss, really.
Oh, my, yes. Yes, we're
several
blocks.
You guys got to block off streets and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Not for a few hours, for a couple days.
For a couple of days, yes. They will start blocking off Thursday, I think at noon, right?
That's the day you know.
Today's Thursday. On Sunday, it'll be good. I don't even know what day it is this week. But yes, today they will start blocking off the streets to put up the stage, and then they'll start blocking off 3rd Street and then all the other surrounding areas. So by probably noon tomorrow.
The anticipation is building the way they do that. Cause I live around the corner, but yeah, so part of it gets blocked off because they put up the stage. They put up is a big deal.
Oh my, yes. It takes them, well, today and tomorrow to put it up. It covers the entire Elm Tree Lane.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's huge.
I mean, it really gives a different quality to downtown right around there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, you feel this kind of excitement in the area. Like, what's going on? This is all blocked off.
And it's very funny. You know, we obviously purposely chose that area because of its, you know, history and you know, the African-American businesses and things like that that were in that area. So there's a reason why that we're there. But we will go down, like, for vendors. We have to mark off the streets and that kind of thing. And we'll meet, you know, people down there. And so the residents know what's happening and know what's coming. And then they'll stop. We're looking forward to it. Or they'll come up and watch us and see what we're doing. It's, you know, 28 years later, they're still doing it. So it's very fun. It's very...
28 years, huh?
28 years.
Uh-huh. I was wondering about that because I was looking at the website and it said... more than 25 years.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I was wondering if somebody couldn't remember what year the first year was.
No. 1989 was the first year.
So were you around then?
Mm-hmm.
Were you involved then?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they really tricked you, haven't they?
My mother.
your mom.
Mother, my mothers get you roped into all kinds of things.
Okay.
But yes, I was around then, and actually I had just graduated from high school in 1989.
Okay.
But my mother was the vendor coordinator.
Okay.
So she was on the original committee with the other group that was there. The chair was Catherine Warner, and then there were some other people that were made up that core group. So my mother was a vendor chair. So you know, your mother then gets you, like I said, into things. I laugh because I know she's listening. But it was things like helping to mark off the street. It was, you know, sending vendor packets back. It was those kind of minor things that occurred. So then as time went on, you know, she took a little bit less of a role and I took more of a role. And then it kind of went me doing a lot more. And then I became the chair. I laugh. I told Jock I would forgive him one day for this. So our first chair was Catherine Warner. She was the chair for about 15 years.
Okay.
Jock Wigginton took over chair 1 year. And then he stepped down and looked at me. And I was like, well, why are you looking at me? Well, you're on the, you know, I was on the executive board. So I said, I will do it, but very temporary because, you know, I have another paying job that I, or a paying job. So I said, I will do it temporarily. And that's why I left 12 years later. Here I am.
Right.
So then my husband, is the co-vendor chair with my mother. And then my daughter helps, you know, mail stuff, lick envelopes in it. So it's become a family event.
Gosh, I'll say.
For us on this side. And
do you, so do you have a sense, or can you share with people, like, I don't know, like the impetus for it, like how it got started, like if it was somebody's idea or what kind of purpose it sort of addressed when it first got started?
Mm-hmm. It actually ended up being a couple of groups that came together, some neighborhood associations there, and then this group of the committee members, because they wanted to figure out a way to bring a fair or bring something into that area to revitalize it. Because, like I said, that historical nature of it, because it had, you know, the Lyric Theater was the center point, obviously, of that neighborhood.
Right.
And then there were, you know, insurance companies and attorney's offices and doctor's offices, African-American history that was in that area. So they wanted to
And you're talking about, like, reaching kind of way back.
Yes, yes. It was reaching way back at that time.
Because, I mean, when the festival started, the Lyric was...
closed.
It was closed mm-hmm. and getting worse.
That would be correct.
Yeah, okay.
That would be correct. And so there was there, but they had an active neighborhood association, a High Street Neighborhood Association that was in that area. And so they wanted to do something just to kind of revitalize, you know, just to bring something to that back to that neighborhood mm-hmm. because of its historical significance. And so as people started talking and things that they did, and then the mayor at that time, you know, there was a block grant that got, you know, that was given, and that group put it together. Ed Holmes and Chester Grundy, there was just that group, Michael Wilson. And so it ended that very first year was a one-day street festival, and it sat between 3rd and 4th.
Okay.
Cold, rainy. Remember I said I was there? Yeah, cold and rainy. So we ended up moving it to Old Douglas School, Old Dunbar School. We moved it into the gym.
Which is?
On Upper,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. So the vendors were inside, the food was outside. And so we said, okay, we're going to keep doing this.
Yeah.
And so we did. And so it ended up, we went back to the one day, and then it expanded to Saturday, then expanded to a two-day, Friday, Saturday. And then when Jock became the chair, he said, well, what about a three-day? So we added gospel for the third day. So uh-huh. That's what we're still doing. For that kickoff weekend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the Roots and Heritage Festival for those who maybe just tuned in. Here with Kimberly Henderson Baird, who is the chair. This is the 28th year for the Roots and Heritage Festival, which kicks off tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
3 days.
Mm-hmm.
How many thousand people do you expect down there?
Oh, my. For the three-day weekend, we usually have between 50 and 70,000.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is just...
Mm-hmm.
It's
massive.
It's massive. And it's also like, I know this from some of my friends on the street where I live, it's kind of a big homecoming thing for some people.
Oh, it is.
A lot of people come back mm-hmm. who grew up in Lexington mm-hmm. or maybe their folks still live here. Or maybe their kids live here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
That's correct. They will plan family reunions around that weekend or just vacation getaways. They'll plan it around that weekend. So we see lots of posts on Facebook, people that just come up and talk to me. Well, when is it? Because we're planning our family reunion. So, I mean, that's been happening for years because mm-hmm. it's, you know, something great to do. And you've got 3 days of, you know, free events, free entertainment. So when you're planning a family reunion, it's great.
Yeah. Hey, let's, you've got, I want to play a couple things for sure, because there's big stage music,
mm-hmm.
Which is just part of it, but mm-hmm. it's a big part of the nighttime stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Billy Soul Bonds yes. is playing. This is Friday night, right?
That's right. He's the headliner for Friday
yeah.
night.
Mm-hmm. And then Club Nouveau is playing on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all just free and open to the public.
Mm-hmm.
It's a street fair. It's a giant street fair. But
That's
this
right.
is like, again, it's a big deal stage and just a whole lot of fun. So I'm gonna be straight up honest right now. I've never heard anything about Billy Soul Bonds, but I'm about to. And I think this is like kind of one of his bigger hits. Scat Cat Here, Kitty Kitty. Can I play this on the air?
Absolutely.
So this is from his album Here, Kitty Kitty. But this is, so Billy Soul Bonds is the, he's the headliner for Friday night,
mm-hmm.
which is tomorrow, just in case you wondered.
I'm going to ask that a couple more times.
And there's a whole bunch of, I mean, there's other people playing on these stages too.
Mm-hmm.
But so we'll come back and talk some more with Kimberly Henderson Baird about the Roots and Heritage Festival 2016. And this is Trivial Thursdays on WRFL. Billy Soul Bond's here. Billy Soul Bond's there, who did something that I have almost never heard anybody do in a song, which was explain why he talks so much.
And I did like that song. I've never heard that before. That was good. That was good.
Wasn't that funny? What does he say? People ask me, Billy, why do you talk so much in your song?
And if he does that tomorrow, I think I'm going to bust out laughing.
I know I will. So that's the Billy Soul Bonds is the Friday night headliner for the Roots and Heritage Festival, mm-hmm. which kicks off tomorrow in downtown Lexington, in the vicinity, spreading out in a variety of directions of 3rd and Elm Tree Lane. I'm here with Kimberly Henderson Baird, who's the chair of the Roots and Heritage Festival for many years. Now, and expecting just tens of thousands of people, lots of people coming home, maybe you grew up in Lexington, but unlike, say, and this is one of the things I really want to sort of, there's some really distinctive qualities to the Roots and Heritage Festival. It's not just a music festival. It's not, it has a, I mean, just as the name would suggest, kind of, Roots and Heritage. Mm-hmm. And do you know how the name, how that name was arrived upon?
I don't know how the name itself was arrived upon, since I, that time was just merely assisting.
Right, yes.
I don't, but I know what the mission is, and I know what the focus is.
Yeah.
So it makes sense what that name is.
Okay.
You know, in terms of celebrating African-American culture and education and achievement to provide educational type programming, celebrating the musical history of it, you know, different things like that. So that's what we try to incorporate during the weekend. And I know people have commented on wanting additional programming and things like that. And over the years, we've tried different things. I mean, we've had, you know, guest speakers. We've had a step show, you know. I mean, yeah.
I love the step show.
Mm-hmm. We've had that. We've done things over the years to try to bring things in. We have a small committee and not as many volunteers to assist in leading some of those things.
Yeah.
And so over time, when it was just becoming very very onerous for us, for that small committee to take on, and I should say in terms of committee, me, to take on some of those additional programming, we just kind of scaled back a little bit to try to really focus on us doing the kickoff and then partnering with other groups, because you'll see on the schedule some other things that are happening that weekend that we will partner with other agencies to help share that burden.
Mm-hmm.
But people say, well, why don't this and why don't that? We are happy to take volunteers and committee members or something like that to help bring in more programming.
So tell people then what is the mission then of the Roots and Heritage Festival?
Exactly what I just said. It is to celebrate. It is to educate, and it's to promote African-American culture achievement. So in terms of the musical selection, people say, well, it's just a street fair. Well, the point of it is to focus on the musical genre for the stages. Mm-hmm. I should start out for those stages. So on stage one, where Billy Soul Bonds would be and those other headliners you see on Friday and Saturday, different musical stylings. It's turned, so on Friday, it generally focuses on blues and jazz, which was very important to our culture.
Okay.
On Saturday, it's R&B. Generally, it's okay. R&B. You know, so we've had Caribbean, we've had some other types of music before as well. So it's to focus on that and to celebrate and honor that. Stage two is a youth stage. So, you know, children are important. And so it's allowing them to shine and allowing them to highlight, to compete. So the first part of it, they have upstage competition. So they'll come and they'll perform and the judges will, you know, usually everyone's given a, you know, some sort of award, but they'll highlight them.
Okay.
And then those winners will get to perform on that stage one, uh-huh. you know, in front of everybody. So that's encouraging them. The parade, you know, we have lots of things that come in. And it walks through that neighborhood, that historic neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, you've got
Lexington's best parade.
Thank you so very much. Right. And so, you know, it has Kentucky State University Band. It has March Madness Band. So it has this group that will come together that allow the residents of that area to come out and see the different groups who are coming and investing in the festival.
This is like through the streets. This is, mm-hmm. and you know, I don't know how other parades get to be this way. It's probably just kind of endemic to just the way downtowns work. But, you know, most every other parade in Lexington goes down Main Street. Mm-hmm. It's all businesses. Mm-hmm. It's a bunch of people, but it's all businesses. The Roots and Heritage Parade goes through mm-hmm. the neighborhood.
That's
it
right.
goes in front of people's houses.
That's right.
People are piled on the streets. Some of them are sitting on their front porches.
That's right.
Some of them are on their roofs.
That's correct. And some, it's quite funny, will come out of the crowd and then just start walking
right.
with people and, you know, and pop in and out or
yeah.
whatever. But that's the point. We've had people say, well, why don't you just go down Main Street like everybody else? Because we're not everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, there is a reason why we do what we do, and there's a reason why we have it where we have it. And so that parade marches through that neighborhood, those neighborhood associations, those people, you know, in those communities.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not saying those as in standoff. That's not what I mean. But in the community,
uh-huh.
You know, so that's the reason why we do what we do. We have some programming that's in the Lyric because, I mean, it was closed, you know, way back when. It's been closed as long as I remember. I was so excited when they opened it up. And as a matter of fact, it turned on the outside lights during the festival when they opened a little over 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So we try to do
yeah.
things in partnership with the Lyric to try to bring in, you know, that historical part of the Lyric.
So, and I want to talk about that too, because so much has, one of the things I hear you saying is that the Roots and Heritage Festival is, it's intrinsic to the community that's right around
mm-hmm.
it, as opposed to say, well, I won't name anything, but you know, just like a giant concert at, you know,
mm-hmm.
Rupp Arena or,
right.
or Applebee's ballpark or
right.
something like that.
Right.
The Roots and Heritage Festival and the community that it sits right in the middle of they're intertwined. They're deeply intertwined.
Correct.
Yeah. And what's, I think it's interesting to, you know, what we've seen over, I don't know how many years it's been now, but you know, the revitalization of the Lyric
mm-hmm.
is one of the coolest thing that's the things that's happened in the historic East End of Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really starting to, get its footing
mm-hmm.
and it's right there. I mean, the Lyric mm-hmm. is right there. And it seems to me that that's just, I just think that that's a great, it's great that the Roots and Heritage Festival happens and the Lyric,
mm-hmm.
which was dark and really mm-hmm. just falling in on itself, is now bright and it's got, you know, neon all over the front of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you all, I assume, are partnering somewhat extensively with Donald Mason over there
mm-hmm.
or with the people over there. It just seems like
we do. And they approached us when they opened about what can we do, you know, during Roots and Heritage, as big as it is and the purpose, what can we do to work together on some programming there. Last year we had Maurice Ashley, who is international grand chess and I say that wrong every time, international grand master chess tournament player, and I think got inducted into the Hall of Fame and that kind of thing. We had him there and had that programming where he came and played chess with the children over at the Lyric. We have the gospel program on Sunday in the Lyric. We have, this year we have Kentucky State that's going to provide a forum there in the Lyric. Sigma Gamma Rho is having a heritage breakfast where they give out scholarships in
right.
the Lyric.
Cool.
So we try to do things like that to, partner with the Lyric to show its importance.
Mm-hmm.
And the community has made it, and I have believed for years we have outgrown people. Well, why don't you bring this and why don't you bring these people, you know, art in terms of artists or whatever. Knowing I know that it would bring more people downtown
yeah.
into the festival area. I also know that we have outgrown that area. But people have made it very clear, that if I try to move it, they might kill me.
So, you say, I love that you say outgrown the area, because we're talking about blocks here.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. The end of the stage, we take up from 4th Street all the way to Short Street.
Yeah.
But what's happening
and then
is...
And then the little artery streets off the
mm-hmm,
sides there.
Yes, they're all close to. But as they're rebuilding that neighborhood and building more homes and building more businesses and apartments and things like that... you know, it's we can't expand too much more. And so you've got all of us kind of there and spread out over those blocks.
Yeah,
And so I'm just a little concerned about we've been very, very blessed over all this time. And,
yeah.
You know, so we're so somewhat limited. So therefore, we have to get creative in the things that we do and where we do them. So that's
okay.
why there's some more stuff in the lyric. That's why we do things throughout, you know, other places.
Right.
To try to alleviate that a little bit. And I'm still working on a spring concert series to, you know, people have asked, now they have to pay for it, but people have asked, why don't you bring, like, I want to see Earth, Wind, and Fire come. People have asked about OJs.
Talk it.
some other things.
The OJs, that, oh my God.
Yeah, uh-huh, yeah. Now, that will have to be, y'all have to pay for that. It's already now, when it's free. So that's maybe minimal, but it's going to have to be paid for that.
Right, right.
You know, so there's ideas that are still happening.
Kimberly Henderson Baird is here. She's the chair of the Roots and Heritage Festival, which kicks off tomorrow in downtown Lexington. One of my favorite things to do, right after Labor Day. And, so that's getting ready to happen. People who want to know more about the Roots and Heritage Festival, just for the record, can go to, what's the website again?
RootsFestKY.com.
Yeah.
And then we also have a Facebook page.
And also, if you use your favorite search engine and type in Roots Heritage, mm-hmm. I pretty much guarantee you it's gonna come up the number one mm-hmm. result. Let's play a big radio hit by your Saturday headliner. And this always makes me think of there used to be a hot dog place downtown called Garrow's. Do you remember Garrow's?
Oh, wow, yes.
And I worked at Garrow's when I was in my younger days, and I made a number of friendships there that somehow revolved around this band, Club Nouveau. I know, I like cemented this friendship with this woman who we were having trouble getting along mm-hmm. back on the back line,
mm-hmm.
and we became friends over me trying to help her find a record for her daughter.
Oh,
and it was a record by Club Nouveau.
Oh, how fun.
And only she said Club Nevo, which sent me off on the search for a long time. I was like, does anybody know who Club Nevo is? You know, and I finally figured out it was Club Nevo. Anyway, so they had a big hit with this, which was a song. I don't know who originally, we talked about this before. I can't remember. It's a cover of a very famous song. And I want to say Benny King, but that's not right because that's Stand By Me. And this is Lean On Me.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we talked about that, didn't we?
So so this is a Saturday night headliner on the big stage. Right?
Yes.
And then we'll come back and talk some more about the Roots and Heritage Festival, specifically about what there is to eat there.
Oh, okay.
We'll be back. This is Trivial Thursdays on WRFL. Club Nouveau there with a pretty big hit they had on top of somebody else's big hit, which was Bill Withers.
Yes.
We figured
I
out.
I was dancing on that one too.
The moment, the second we turned the mics off. And thanks to somebody who called in and mentioned that too.
Uh-huh.
So Club Nouveau playing downtown on Saturday night
uh-huh.
at the Roots and Heritage Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's on the big stage. We talked about, now these stages, as someone who lives in the immediate proximity, there's music coming out of these stages uh-huh. for all of the sort of reasonable hours of the day. Mm-hmm. And it cuts off at a reasonable hour at night, too.
At 11, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yes.
Straight up, boom.
Uh-huh. Yo, yes, they know, because I will come and cut it off. If it goes a little past, you know, sometimes if something got behind or whatever, I'll let them go a few minutes past. But
I will say, as a personal witness, that it generally at 11 o'clock, boom, it's off.
Thank you. Tell them to cut the
power. I say that as a neighbor and a fan. Let's see. So, and these stages have numerous acts, different types of music. We talked a little bit about, you know, there's R&B and kind of jazz, and
mm-hmm.
There's some hip hop. Do you do hip hop? What's the deal with that?
We will generally do that on stage two, the uh-huh. younger stage.
Okay.
That's really probably the group that would appreciate that more.
Yeah.
So we will have it as long as it's clean and family appropriate and everything like that. So if they are an act that wants to perform, They'll have to submit, you know, kind of a demo or something like that to our Stage 2 committee so they can listen to it. And as long as it doesn't have explicit lyrics or, you know, anything like that, then they're allowed to perform on that stage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
because this is like, I mean, family friendly is just a core value of, of Roots and Heritage, I feel like.
Yes. So everything that we try to do, like we'll tell the artists before you get on, do not get on there and start cussing. Don't start stripping. Don't start doing some things that happened in the past. You know, keep in mind that there are kids out there and they're listening and they're watching. And, you know, so we try to tell them that. And 99% of the time that works out perfectly well.
Yeah, yeah.
On occasion, and something might slip. And if it's too much, I just tell them to cut off the mic. I have no problem getting on. And they know, see, this is the prosecutor in me. I have no problem getting on stage and telling them to cut it. You know, shut off the mic, walk them off the stage. I don't care. But, you know, because when you hear Roots and Heritage and Issues Have, that's my name they hear.
Right,
and
right. Gonna,
you know. And I'm born and raised here, so they know me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to make sure all is working well.
But, and, you know, I mean, even just hearing you talk about it makes me think of the, I don't know, the family quality of it, which is something that I've always gotten a sense of when I walk around down there. And what I expect to do from where I live, which is really close, is do, like, you know, 24 tours through it. Like at any given moment at home, I might grab my 5-year-old daughter and be like, hey, let's go walk. Let's go walk through the festival. And cause it's just, there's just so many sights, sounds and smells.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And
we have, probably 200 vendors between the information vendors, the commercial, those, you know, selling wares, and the food vendors. So if you start at one end, Third, if you start at the corner of Third and walk all the way to, I don't know, Dewey's or so, you'll see, I mean, variety of vendors.
Yeah.
So some of them may be seeming to sell similar things like T-shirts or, you know, purses or sunglasses or whatever. But they're different among booths. And then some of them, you know, have artwork. We've got people artwork. We've had people that bring children's books, baskets, you know, gift baskets that you can buy. Oils and shea butter and things like that. Information.
There is no shortage of shea butter there. Let's be clear.
That's right. That's right. And people buy it. I think I bought it one time. Just over time, I kind of hang out in the trailer, so I don't get to shop like I used to. But yes, I mean, there's, if you want it, it's there.
Yeah.
You know, all kinds of things.
That's my favorite place to shop for sunglasses, just between you and me.
That, well, and purses. Somebody didn't come one year and I think the city got a call and fussing. They didn't come with a purse. So, you know, it's all kinds of things. And, you know, if they want to be a vendor and see something different, you know, they can always apply. But
how many vendors did you say you might have?
Between those three, there's probably about 150, 200.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we haven't even touched on the food factor yet, which I do want to talk about because I love nothing more than going and eating as kind of as many times as I can over the course of 2.5 days. Is there anywhere in Lexington where there are more opportunities to buy whiting fish sandwiches?
No, probably not. Probably not. And they're all, depending on the seasoning and the batter, they all kind of taste different. You know, I don't like seafood, so to me, they all taste the same.
It's a tragedy.
I know. I've tried. I've tried.
I'll take care of it.
Right. So others can go. My boss even comes down and he makes it a point to tell me I got my fish sandwich.
Yeah.
So, you know, and there's a couple favorites that people kind of gravitate to.
I do a huge tour. Like when my family's with me, they kind of get annoyed because I have to go around and sort of check out every place before I decide which, you know, which one's going to be my pick for that moment.
Yes. And that's sort of the point, because people have commented about them all being in that particular area. One, they're limited because they all need electricity and there's only electricity in so many spaces.
Right.
So it's all kind of in that area. But I wanted to keep them together so that you could do that. You could do a tour, you know, see what strikes your fancy at that particular moment. And one place may have one thing, and then after that you need your dessert, so you're gonna get a funnel cake or, you know, ice cream or something, and then after that you need your frozen drink, and so you're gonna go to the end, you know. So they you know, and I try to keep them, and I think they know that too, that we try to keep them in the same spot because your favorite person, you know, generally sits here, so that's where they go to.
Right.
So there's a little method to that what appears to be madness down in that area.
Well, and the whole area is so transformed, kind of, that, like, I mean, even as someone that lives down there, I'd be hard pressed to the food trucks and stuff are they on 3rd? No. They're on, what are the, what street are they on?
Corral. Well, the majority of them are on Corral.
Okay.
And then some of them, generally we try to do tents. I think there may be a truck or two. We'll go right in front of St. James Place, right past Corral. So it kind of makes a small dipper, I guess.
Okay,
so it
kind
of makes the horseshoe and the on Corral and then right in front of St. James.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, let's see. So I was just thinking about how the whole area is so transformed that even as someone who lives down there, it just looks like I'm in another place when the Roots and Heritage Festival is going on. So people that come down there from, I don't know, from anywhere else in Lexington, you got any parking recommendations is what I'm trying to get around to.
As they said, get in where you fit in.
That's right.
Any of the side streets, so there's officers there, so, you know, obviously you're kind of limited. The officers are relatively close because they don't want people obviously driving through crashing into people. But a lot of people will park on any of the Wilson, I think, 2nd, 4th. And because we're so big, you can park pretty much anywhere and still be right there close by.
Yeah.
So a lot of people will park near the coroner's office between, I guess, Elm Tree and MLK.
Okay.
So any of those areas, I would stay away and be very cognizant of the ones that signs that say you will be towed because you will be towed. You will be. Not by us.
Right.
It's not by us, but it is by the Bluegrass Towing and some of those people that own those lots that will tow.
So. Kimberly, what am I forgetting? I could go on gushing forever about the Roots and Heritage Festival, and I love doing that. But have I missed anything? Any big thing?
We have covered the Friday and Saturday night stages. We've covered the parade. I mentioned the scholarship breakfast. It's going to be on Saturday.
Right. So is that open to the public, or how does that work?
It is. It's not. I think tickets are $10. Uh-huh. And so Sigma Gamma Rho sorority, which I am an honorary member of, wanted to. If you've ever been to the MLK celebration, just before that, there's the breakfast that they do.
Right. Yeah, I've been to that. It's awesome.
By Alpha Phi Alpha. And so Sigma Gamma Rho wanted to start something like that in conjunction with Roots and Heritage. So it's a scholarship breakfast. So you'll come. The food was so good. Uh-huh. And this is their second year doing it. And they will raise money to give to college seniors for scholarships. And so I think they have to write an essay and things like that, and they will read it and or whatever, and then present them with the scholarship. So Roots and Heritage is a part of that as well.
Okay.
So it's fantastic. And then Kentucky State University later that afternoon on Saturday is also going to present a forum, sort of a resource. One is to get the community to come and talk about issues in the bullying, domestic violence, gun violence, things like that. And then you can get resources and give some feedback and things like that for a project that they're working on.
Okay.
So there are definitely lots on the website. The schedule of events is on there, so there's lots of things for people to come and do during the festival.
I thought of one thing that we didn't mention, because there's a lot of I don't know if it's on the schedule technically or not, but a lot of people maybe don't know that after the awesome parade, which is on Saturday at, is it 10?
11.
After the parade, somewhat after the parade, some vague amount of time after the parade, first of all, Kentucky State University is going to be here, and as a member of March Madness Marching Band, I'll tell you that there's nothing that we look forward to more. And gosh, they're entertaining to watch. Walk down the street, because what I'm trying to get around to is there's usually this kind of informal performance in the intersection of 4th and Elm Tree Lane, where Kentucky State performs. Mm-hmm. Maybe March Madness performs if you ask us to. Mm-hmm. Hint, hint.
You're asking. We're asking. Yes. Yes.
And they sort of perform in the round. There's thousands of people around in this big circle, and KSU just blows minds and drops jaws. and March Madness then just simply feels honored and humbled to come after them.
You are loved just as much, let me tell you.
And so anyway, so that's something for people to see. Like if you catch the parade, stick around. Again, I don't know if this is a formal event or something. I don't know how that happens, but we usually just kind of hang around for a while, and then suddenly KSU starts playing in the middle of the intersection.
It was originally to be a battle of the bands, in quotes it was, and now it's just kind of a showdown, I guess. But everybody knows it happens, and so it, you know, kind of feeds in right after the parade and Kentucky State finishes. They just kind of wander themselves over into that area, and then followed by March Madness and Bryan Station High School.
Oh, good,
Central
Bryan Station. Oh, we've got four bands?
We've got four.
Woo!
So they'll kind of come over and they'll perform, and yes, the crowd is very vocal if those bands are not there, you know, to not only be in the parade, but to perform afterwards.
Then
that'll be, and that's right after the parade, so that's why it's kind of a vague time, but the parade is usually about an hour, and then they'll come and perform right after that.
Right.
And then after all of that's over, wander on down to Kids Fest, which is at Short Street, and that goes to 5 o'clock. And so there's kids-specific programming down there. Groups that will come and do art projects and engineering projects, and PNC Bank will have their Grow With Me truck. So there's things to do specifically for kids, painting on the street, things like that down there.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
So lots of stuff.
So much stuff.
Yes, lots of stuff.
What what are you looking forward to the most besides
sleeping? Sleep on Sunday. Club Nouveau. I don't have a specific thing that I look forward to, because to me it's the whole weekend experience. And so usually, like, I'm joking about, you know, I'm needing to step down, I need a mentor, things like that, and I'm, you know, this is it for me, and I threaten to quit every year. And then at some point, usually on Friday, usually or Saturday night, I'll be on stage and I will look out at this sea of people that are happy and, you know, cheering and having a wonderful time all the way down to Short Street. And I was like, okay, you got me one more year.
Yep.
You know? So that's how it's kind of continued. So, but it's a wonderful weekend.
Well, I just want to thank you, Kimberly Henderson Baird, the chair of the Roots and Heritage Festival.
Thank you.
And I just want to say, as a complete side note, because you mentioned it, you work as a, are you a prosecuting attorney?
I am.
Yeah.
That's my paid job.
In Ray Larson's office.
I am.
And, you know, I don't know if it's gotten back to you or not, but you're far, there's a photo of your staff on Ray Larson's website. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you what that look on your face in that picture is. That look is, tell it to the judge. You're not the person in that, at least not with me right now. I haven't seen the tell it to the judge look once.
I have different personas. It changes when I walk into the courtroom. Our mutual friend gave me a heads up that you might say that. But it was based on, you've seen the movie or the TV show Law and Order.
I have.
You know, and they introduce the cops and they introduce the prosecutors. And at the end, they're all kind of standing there. Yeah, that was kind of what it was based on. So all of us kind of have that look.
Well, I hope I never see your tell it to the judge face.
Well.
I'll do my best.
That's good.
Kimberly Henderson Baird, the chair of the Roots and Heritage Festival. People want to know more about Roots and Heritage, which kicks off tomorrow. They can check out RootsFestKY. Is that right?
Yes, RootsFestKY.com.
And, of course, all over Facebook and stuff.
Yes.
And there's also an insert that it'll probably be in the Weekender, I expect, too. This is from the Key News Journal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway, there's lots going on. One of my favorite things that happens in downtown Lexington, top of the list. And since you mentioned Club Nouveau, I'm going to send you out with one more Club Nouveau song called Oh Happy Day, which, you know, you'll be feeling this on Sunday.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.FM and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to wrfl.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.
Stars there from their album, what's it called? In the Bedroom After the War? In Our Bedroom After the War. With my favorite book there and one of my favorite book people is here, and that's Julie Rand. Hi, Julie.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Mick.
Sure. The Kentucky Women Writers Conference. It's kind of your jam.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, happening not this weekend, but next weekend,
September
15th through 18th.
Yeah.
We've got 4 days of free events, ticketed events, all kinds of stuff for Lexington and nationally.
We'll right. Now, this has been, I always use the word venerable. It's been going on for a good while now. Huh?
It has been. And I think I heard you use that word for the Roots and Heritage Festival as
Did
well.
I may have overused.
Yeah.
I'm talking to an English professor. I may have overused that word. I have a pretty decent vocabulary, but I do become fond of certain words.
I think it's a great word. And I think it definitely describes our event. This is the 38th annual Kentucky Women Writers Conference. We've been putting on a conference every year since 1979.
See, for me, venerable starts at 28. Okay. That's what the Roots and Heritage was. And so anything past that is venerable.
Or if you're talking about trees, it has to be in the three figures, right?
Right.
We've got a great Lexington author who wrote a book called Venerable Trees. Do you know about that?
No. See, yeah. Literary references going over my head.
Yeah. Anyway, he's not on the program, so we won't talk about that anymore. But I love the word, too. So... So
38 years.
38 years.
And now, this is very much tied to UK, right?
It is, yes. UK started this in 1979. A group of faculty wanted to bring women writers to the campus to talk about their work and really just showcase, a single sex program in that way. I think it was around the time that women's studies programs were becoming more prevalent. It was actually sort of at the beginning of that wave. And so, UK was really out ahead of the curve with that. And so over time, it has evolved into more of a focus on creative writing instruction. So MFA programs, Masters of Fine Arts in Creative Writing, have become an increasingly popular degree. UK offered that degree, started offering that 3 years ago, although we have a long tradition of teaching creative writing at UK with, some amazing faculty. But in terms of actually awarding the degree, it's a relatively new program. And so that's really our focus. We appeal to both readers and writers, but, if you are trying to learn how to write or already have a book, really at any point in your career, you're going to find inspiration at our event.
And so so it's a collection of events, really. I mean, in some cases, there are people speaking, but there's also workshops, too.
That's right. Yes. So we have, I can just kind of go down the list if you want, although I know we have a guest coming up.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. So the first thing we're doing is the Sonia Sanchez series, which is a speakers series that is chaired by Patrice Muhammad. She is sort of a committee of one, like your previous guest. I heard her use that phrase. And of course, Patrice has been very involved in the Roots and Heritage over the years as well. But we've developed this relationship with this poet, Sonia Sanchez, who was really a...
we've got a guest calling. So let's roll our guest in.
Yes,
here.
I'll talk about the Sonia Sanchez series afterwards. Okay.
And let's see. This is the part where we use technology and so let's see if we do. We have a guest on the line.
Yes.
Hello, caller.
Hi.
You're the
Mick,
first.
How are you?
You're the first caller. Congratulations.
Thank you. What do I win?
You win a period of time on the radio with Julie Rand.
Oh, that's great.
Hi, Dana.
Hi, Julie. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Dana Spiota is on the line from, you're calling from Syracuse?
Okay,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, good morning, Dana.
Good morning.
How's coffee?
Coffee's great. Very important part of a writer's life.
Right,
coffee,
right.
I think, right.
What about?
And probably a radio host also relies often on coffee.
Indeed. Indeed, it's true. Now, are you, as far as writing goes, does morning figure heavily into your writing world? Or
Yeah, mornings are really, for me, and I think maybe, I teach and I have a child, so I tend to get up very early and try to get my writing done between 5 and 7.
Yeah. I love the idea of that.
Then you just, the rest of the day is a win, right? If you got a little bit of work done, then you just feel great all day, and you've already accomplished a lot. So I'm more of the do a little bit every day rather than just take up one day where you just write. For me, it works better because if you're working on a novel or something, you kind of want to always keep in touch with it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The one thing that whenever I hear writers say that, and I know a lot do, and I believe your Syracuse colleague Mary Carr writes at that time as well, what about bedtime? Are you going to bed at like 8 p.m., or do you just not need a lot of sleep?
No, kind of chronic state of sleep deprivation. I probably would be a better, person all around if I got more sleep, but I tend to go to bed at 10,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but I pretty much... And if I go later than that, I'll still get up. But, I also have days where I don't have my daughter when she's with her dad. And then I get more writing in and I can, fudge it a little bit and do, 5:30 to 8:30 or something like that. Because I usually don't teach till the afternoon. But I do find that first thing in the morning when your brain is fresh and you haven't checked your email and you haven't read the paper and, you just have the coffee and you work and you sort of have that nice, almost in a dream state. Clarity. For me, I guess it's different for everybody. Some people like to write in the middle of the night. They get that kind of state of mind. But you have to have that state of mind where you're sort of in and out of your consciousness. You know what I mean? You have a little bit of the subconscious still present, I think.
Right, right.
So you don't check Instagram first?
No, yeah. Post a bunch of stuff on Instagram.
Note to self. Stop checking Instagram first. Okay,
yeah.
That's good. Yeah, this is my problem. I've been trying to meditate in the morning and, but first I check Facebook and Instagram. It doesn't work.
Those two things don't go together, no.
So, let's see. Dana Spiota's on the phone and Julie Wren is here in the studio for our listeners who just tuned in. Both are part of the Kentucky Women Writers Conference, which is coming up next weekend. And let's see. So, and we just kind of stumbled our way into a conversation about writing. Imagine that.
Right.
Now, I can't remember who I read that said this, and probably lots of teachers teachers have said something to this effect. But, a lot of times the question comes up for people finding time to write.
Yeah.
And
right.
And I read something to the extent to the effect of, if you can't find time to write in your busy life, then you're just as unlikely to find time to write if you had a whole lot more time. Does that make any sense?
I think that's true.
That's a terrible paraphrase.
Yeah, because in a weird kind of way, when you have, there's a limit to how much time you actually have. I mean, time is finite in a day, right?
Yeah.
But there is this idea, I think, that when you have a schedule, when you have multiple things to do, you can't really waste time. So you kind of stick to getting your writing in. While if you have all day and you have like a leave of absence from your job and everything, you sort of, you can be more leisurely about it. And I find that you might not get as much done than when you know that you have to be somewhere later, so you have to do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's all about tricking yourself into doing this thing, which can often not feel like a priority. And the best writing advice I got from someone was to say that you have to make writing your top priority. And I think some people invent deadlines and they give themselves page quotas and things like that. There's all sorts of tricks you can play, but everything else has like real deadlines, right? And writing often doesn't have that kind of deadline, at least fiction doesn't. If you're writing as a journalist, you do. But so you kind of have to invent these weird constraints to get yourself. That's what discipline is, really, I think, is just knowing your own weaknesses and then inventing a construct so you can outsmart your own weaknesses.
I'm going to work on that.
Yeah.
I'm trying bullet journal
and
to see
honestly,
if that works.
I think the other thing that was helpful is someone told me, try to write 7 days a week and you might fail 3 out of 7 days, but you still get 4 days, you know? So in a lot of ways, you're moving forward by continually failing, but yet you're moving forward.
And right. does the guilt from the 3 days of failure then make you more kind of driven on the other 4 days?
Yeah, and it should. There's probably a healthier way to do it, but, you know.
Oh, who wants that? So, like, I mean, we could be talking about, I mean, you're talking, in this case, you are a novelist, Dana, and we're talking about, right. I suppose you're talking about your quote-unquote work, novel writing. But, I mean, this could be right. true, this could be true for anything, right? This could be true for journaling or what have you.
Yeah, and it could be true for, you know, people have the same view about exercise. Any discipline that you do, or if you're going to learn the piano or become a great athlete or something, I mean, you have to find a way to make yourself work,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, and I think with writing, a lot of times people have this idea that you wait till you're inspired. And unfortunately, that isn't really the way it gets done by most writers. There are some writers who are like that, I think. But most writers that I've heard will find that they have to sit down every day. And it's kind of it starts to get better. At first it's hard, but then your brain, I think, if you sit down every day, kind of expects that you're going to be writing, and it will save things for that moment. It'll kind of yield. It just has a way of becoming a habit of mind that's different from the rest of your life. So you kind of carve out a little special alley for your creativity that is used to being there, and your body really and your mind really reacts to it in that way. So I think there's something really true about a daily habit, and that gets better over time. Like, it produces more over time in just a really practical sense, you know.
So at what point then do you stop dreading that and look and instead looking forward to it? This is sort of a
pretty much never.
Oh no!
No! I would say this is that sometimes it's fun. A lot of times it's really frustrating, and there's a lot of joy in it, but there is a lot of anxiety. I mean, for me, I like the challenge and I get excited, but I mean, there's definitely when I finish a book. Part of me is always saying, oh, great, I don't have to do that for a while, you know? So, and then you kind of get miserable and you miss it because there's an engagement with the world. When you're working on a book, so much of your mind is engaged that you start to feel less yourself after time, you know? But you kind of have to go through that away period. Oh, it's like a terrible marriage, I think.
Dana Spiotta is on the phone from Syracuse, and she is, and I'm here with Julie Wren too. Now, both of the Kentucky Women Writers Conference. Now, Dana will be visiting as
one of our featured presenters.
Thank you. That's
yes,
the term I was looking for.
Yeah,
I'll be with Mary Carr, interviewing Mary Carr when she does her keynote
okay.
on Friday.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And I'll also be doing a workshop. Mm-hmm. And a reading. I'm doing a lot.
You're doing a lot. Yeah. We ask a lot of each of our featured presenters, have to do multiple sessions for us. So let's talk more about that keynote on Friday night. So it's September 16th. Mary Carr, for those of our listeners who don't know who she is, her memoir that came out in the early 90s, The Liars Club, is credited with kickstarting the memoir revolution, I think is the phrase her publisher uses. It was a bestseller. It's about her crazy Texas childhood. She came out with two more after that, Cherry, about her teenage years, and Lit, about her adult life, in which she got married, had a child, got divorced, got sober, got Catholic, and it's a very eventful book as well. So, Dana, at what point did you become acquainted with Mary?
Well, Mary and I are colleagues here at Syracuse. Mary's been teaching here for a really long time, and I was hired 7 years ago, and that's when I first met Mary. And she's an amazing teacher. She just also published a book about writing memoir. last year, right? And which is an excellent book. She has a kind of legendary memoir class that she teaches at Syracuse, where she actually she does this great thing where she stages a fake altercation at the beginning of class. And like one of the other professors comes in and they have a terrible fight in front of the students and the students are totally freaked out. And then she asks them to write down what happens and what they witnessed. And it's a way, an exercise to see that they all are so emotionally overwrought that they don't really remember it very accurately. And so it's a way of them understanding how memory can be formed by strong emotion. So maybe not trust all of your, you know, that's sort of a way of understanding memoir is not this exact science.
So it's just
and
like
doubt various parts of it and how to handle that. So she's very interested in these, I think, a lot of integrity and, you know, rules for yourself going forward as to how to do this honorably and truthfully. Is acknowledging that there's a lot of what we remember is affected by how we feel about it. So that was kind of, so she does this great class, as well as teach poetry, yes.
Are you familiar with Lisa Carver?
Raymond Carver used to teach here, yeah.
Well, no, Lisa Carver.
Oh.
Lisa Carver, who used to be a kind of a punk rock performer and turned into a kind of incredible, I don't know, I suppose memoirist.
Uh-huh.
She used to perform under the name Suck Dog, but my point is she has this really great book that I highly recommend called How to Not Write, and I was reminded of it when you said that because she claims that she has started a variety of workshops that she's done by having herself be abducted.
Oh my God.
And I was never really clear about how that unfolded, but she talked about, again, creating this sort of almost, I feel like, kind of a Rashomon sort of experience
for
the students.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, these are the ultimate writing prompts.
The trouble is, though, once you've written about it in your book about memoir, you can't pull that trick anymore, right? Because everybody's going to know.
Right. Yes, I don't recall seeing that in her book, The Art of Memoir, so I think she kept that out.
No, it's in there.
Is it in there? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
The fake fight?
The
Rashomon moment?
The fight.
The
you know what? I bet even if you know it's coming, it's still hard to remember it accurately because it's just too much going on.
Right. I mean, it's like theater. You know it's pretend, but you're still there's still an emotional impact from what you're seeing.
Right. Yeah, and we're just incredibly faulty creatures as recorders of what happens in front of us.
Yeah. But you tend towards fiction. You've not written a memoir yourself, and your most recent novel is about the filmmaking world of Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's about these two women who are lifelong friends, and they both become filmmakers. One makes documentary, kind of transgressive documentary films, and the other one makes, you know, sort of feminist comedies, kind of Amy Schumer type things, and they're both pretty successful, and it kind of tracks their complex relationship, which is both loving and competitive and sometimes very distant. And another part of the book is about this woman. One of the subjects of this documentary filmmaker is this woman who does catfishing, kind of pre-internet catfishing. She calls men on the phone and seduces them, and she's sort of a legendary seductress.
I know that person. And stop if you will, and you mentioned the term catfishing, which I, as recently as like 2 months ago, I wouldn't have known what you were talking about.
I still don't know. I haven't heard that. So, although I know the plot of the book, so I can guess. But
Yeah.
It's where you pretend to be someone else. It's something that happens frequently on the internet, right? You pretend to be a beautiful 20-year-old girl when you're really, you know, a middle-aged man. And you have relationships with people, you send them pictures, that's completely false. And what's interesting to me about this woman, it's inspired by a real life woman. And she did this on the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
She got the numbers of these kind of successful men in Hollywood. And she was notorious. She would use the fact that she knew one to get on the phone with another. And it wasn't phone sex. It was really just conversation and a little bit of male vanity stroking about knowing what their careers were, that kind of stuff. But I always thought when I read about her, what was she in it for? Because she was never going to get – I mean, there's always going to be a time when they're going to want to meet you and you can't meet them. And so you're kind of in it just for the momentary attention or love. And so you're a con artist, but not for money. I thought that was very interesting.
And again, I'm not kidding when I say that, like, I'm going back like 20 years in my life and I was involved in something like this.
Really?
And
did someone do it to you?
Yeah, they did. Oh. And it was someone that called, this was before cell phones or anything, but it was someone that called, I still remember how it started. They called for my roommate and he wasn't there. And that led us into this conversation, and we started having this series of conversations, you know, and it was exactly the way you just described it. There wasn't any, I mean, it didn't like end horribly or anything like that, but my curiosity was just increasingly piqued, and increasingly I kept trying to arrange us meeting one another. And that never happened. And then I later discovered that this same person had done it to several other people that I knew, and they knew who the person was, and they'd also tried to meet her and so forth and so on.
And had she been lying to you about who she was or what she looked like or what her career was?
I don't think that anybody ever, I'm not sure if anyone ever met her. A couple of people tried kind of aggressively to you know, because so much is contained in the sort of secret world of that, where like if it just stays between you and the person, then there's a whole kind of microcosm that happens. But let's say you've got several buddies and they're all getting catfished too, then you might get together and be like, let's kind of try to play this together and trick this person out into the open. I can't remember what happened with it. I mean, again, like there was no horrible upshot of it or anything like that.
But you have to be curious about her motivations, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that's why I mention all of that, because that is to me the ultimate curiosity of catfishing, not to completely, you know, derail this into that, but is that, it's like the motivation, because like you said, the ultimate payoff is not going to happen.
Right. But I mean,
well, the woman that I write about, Jelly, she's, you know, she feels herself to be more real on the phone. That persona she creates on the phone is really more representative of who she is than what she is in real life. So she doesn't perceive, like any good con artist, she doesn't think of herself as really lying. Mm-hmm. She just thinks she's kind of creating a kind of, a collaborative art project with this person, even though the other person doesn't know she's doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's so like, I mean, I totally, not just from that experience, but you also took me back to an early days of email thing where I had like this email person that I never met.
Right.
And we went back and forth. And again, it wasn't like really lascivious or anything like that. I felt like it was a collaborative art project between the two of us. So maybe maybe it being two-sided is uncommon, but.
Well, there's something about certain kinds of technology that allow you to have very specific kinds of intimacy that are both, you know, dependent on the technology and also sort of interfered with ultimately by the technology. It's that pretty much a lot of what the book's about.
Yeah. Dana Spioto is on the phone from Syracuse, New York. She is the author of Innocence and Others, which is what we're talking about in a roundabout way, along with Julie Wren of the Kentucky Women Writers Conference. Dana's going to be here next weekend.
Yeah, next. Well, she'll do a keynote interview with Mary Carr on Friday night, September 16, at the Singletary Center. And she'll teach a workshop and give a reading from Innocence and Others.
Mm-hmm. I tell you what, let's see. Why don't we take just like a little break, a tiny musical break. And Dana, you stay on the line. The technology here is a little peculiar. So just,
okay.
I may be able to talk to you when we're not on the air. I may not, but just stay on the line. Okay. So we're going to take just a little break. This is Trivial Thursdays on WRFL. And we will be right back with Dana Spioto and Julie Wren. This is Trivial Thursdays.
Great music on the show. I love the music. I've been listening to it this morning. It's really great.
Well, thanks for joining us. Dana Spioto is on the phone from Syracuse, New York. And Julie Wren is here in the studio. talking about the Kentucky Women Writers Conference. This is Trivial Thursdays, of course. Thanks for tuning in. It's about 10 till 9. Coming up at 9 is Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. So we've got just a few more minutes left. Having a wonderful free-roaming conversation with Dana and Julie. And I wanted to take a moment to make sure that I didn't free roam too farly.
Well, one thing I thought we could bring the conversation back to is, you know, teaching writing, because the writers we bring to the Women Writers Conference are all very esteemed teachers as mm-hmm. well as writers. And that's certainly the case with Dana. And she is teaching a workshop on how to begin a novel. And so I wonder, is that similar to something you do at Syracuse, Dana, or is that just a current interest of yours?
Well, I mean, it's designed to be a two-day, a two-part thing rather than a semester thing, but I do teach, I certainly, in the MFA program, talk a lot about how to write a novel, how to begin a novel. A lot of the students, we get really kind of amazing, brilliant students in the MFA program, but a lot of them are very excited to try writing a novel, try something longer. They're usually accomplished short story writers. Others are just always want to write a novel and never are that interested in short story writers. But again, I think just talking about your own practice with other writers is helpful. And it helps me too. I start to, they say that if you teach something, if you're sort of forced to be articulate about what you're doing, I think it helps you have more clarity about your own process. All of that is very helpful. I don't believe in this idea that you could become too self-conscious, really, because I think when you're in your writing mode, you're in your writing mode, and when you're in your learning mode, all that stuff helps you. When you need it, it kind of goes into your toolbox. So I usually have a workshop that I teach every year, and I teach literature for writers classes too, and this is a combo. We'll be looking at novel openings from some very contemporary books, like Elizabeth Strout and Colson Whitehead, but also we go back as far as Middlemarch and just look at how these novels begin, what they put in motion. And when you're thinking about a longer project, people have the tendency to try to put a whole bunch right in there, but you have time. You can start in one place and then move to another place. It's not all the terms don't have to be present on the first page. And so it's just getting into a different rhythm of writing, really, thinking about a bigger thing as well as making each chapter feel complete in itself, too. So we'll be talking about all those possibilities. I don't have as a teacher, I try to have a lot of humility because no one really knows how to do this exactly. But you just kind of talk about what's worked and what has not worked for you and what tends to work from other writers. And every, artist has to figure out for herself what's going to work. And a lot of that's by trial and error. And then it might change from book to book. It's not an easy thing. So I talk a lot about my own attempts and results of those things.
Have you started novels that you then set aside and said, nope, that's not going to work?
Yeah, I have. But I try, often what will happen is I'll be going in one direction and really become interested in another direction, and some of that will still be in the original, so it doesn't feels like I'm just changing everything rather than just chucking it. But there's been times when I've had ideas that I've began and then abandoned. But I might go back to them at some point. But it feels very blind and intuitive in the beginning. So you just kind of, so it's a very weird state. Later on, once you've written a lot, you have way more, you've made a lot of decisions and the path becomes more narrow. But in the beginning, all these possibilities exist, which is exciting, but also daunting.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to make a real dramatic change in subject here and ask you if you've ever been to Kentucky before.
I'm so excited to come to Lexington. I really, I can't wait.
Now, you have a daughter, and a lot of girls her age love horses. Is that the case in your household?
No. No. No, she doesn't. She's not one of those horse girls.
Not one of those horse girls, because we got a lot of things for people like that here in Lexington. But anyway.
Don't make me play the there's the Jonathan Richman song that's called "I Don't See Her Much Since She Started With Horses." Which I think is up there with Jonathan Richman's many clever moments.
Yeah.
Oh, my
so,
gosh.
I'm fascinated to listen to a lot of this. And I got to say, especially someone who's got their journalism degree in their back pocket, which is me, the prospect of writing a novel is just absolutely incomprehensible to me.
Yeah.
You should come to my workshop.
Yeah.
You don't want to write one, but
I don't know. Well, it sounds to me like even people that write novels maybe don't want to write one.
Yeah. the thing that always amazes
you're really in it and everything, it's absorbing all of you.
Yeah.
It feels pretty satisfying, I will say that.
I believe it.
I've not written a book, and what I admire about people who do is sticking with the same project over a period of several years usually is what it takes, if not a decade. I mean, there's novels out there that, you know, the writers tell us, yeah, this took me 10 years, you know, and to not lose interest in what you're doing.
You have to be obsessed. You have to really be a little, you know, have to make sure that you pick something that really fascinates you, mm-hmm. which I'm going to talk about. You know, usually it's starting with questions rather than answers is a healthy place to start. Because you're writing to discover something, and you're more likely to get, you know, really caught up in it if those stakes are there for you personally, rather than just sort of like, I'm going to write this novel to tell the world about this thing I already know. You're going to get bored doing that. We'll get bored, too, as readers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the part that I think that always confuses me kind of is I keep feeling like you would have to, I was just thinking, okay, I'm going to write a book about this person who accidentally kills this other person, and then they feel sorry about it. That's the story. But what I'm trying to say is, like, it's hard for me to conceive of not having, like, I keep looking, I look inside, and I'm like, oh, I don't know, I don't got anything, you know, to write the book about, as opposed to this exploratory process, which is what I hear from you, kind of, is this, it's this, you know, this exploration, this discipline, this practice, and then out of that comes a novel.
Right. I mean, it gets more complicated as it goes along. But, you know, the deeper you go, the more complex it gets, and you'll just find that everyone has this fear that they're not going to have enough material, but it turns out there's tons of material. You know, there's just, you just
I do believe that. Yeah, I do believe the opposite is true. I will, from my own writing experience, does tell me that you wind up with way too much material practically.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think what we're talking about, too, is sort of the definition of the literary novel, that exploratory process. I mean, certainly there's lots of other novels out there that are referred to as genre fiction, you know, thrillers, mysteries.
Right.
And they...
Yeah, that's a different process. I think you have to kind of back rig something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to know where you're going, and it's more of a machine, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Mick just pointed to the time to me, and so I'm going to do
that's a backstage radio trick.
Yeah. So I do want to say, we've talked a lot about what we're doing next Friday night. Next Saturday night is the Wild Women of Poetry Slam. It's a live poetry competition. It's been in a number of venues over the years. This year we're back at Transylvania University. We have six poets who are going to compete. There'll be audience judging, and Melissa Lozada Oliva will be the feature poet and celebrity judge. This was Bianca Spriggs' project for a decade. She has stepped down, and we're going to see if we can do it without her. Our new MC is Sarah Volpe. I think she's going to be fantastic.
Good luck, Sarah.
Exactly. Very big shoes to fill.
This is like a super fun thing, right?
I mean, oh, yeah.
This is wildly fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. It is a raucous evening. Yeah. So definitely come out for that.
Let's see. So as we kind of wrap up here, I just want to thank Dana. I want to thank you for calling in and providing some wonderful morning conversation. And
thanks for having me, Mick.
I do hope to cross paths with you during the Women Writers Conference.
That would be great.
And let's see. So It's the Women Writers Conference, which is full of events, first of all.
Right.
Not just for women.
The best way to find out about the... Yes, we welcome men to our audiences, but feature only the work of women writers. That's the way we
describe it. Just worth noting, you know.
Yeah, but men are definitely welcome and do come. The best way to find out is to Google Kentucky Women Writers Conference or just type in our address, KentuckyWomenWriters.org. Or you can call 859-257-2874.
Thanks, Julie. Thanks, Dana. We got to get out of here. This is WRFL Lexington, Democracy Now! Coming right up. Thanks for listening to Trivial Thursdays.